Meet the voice behind the beard and the founder of Premium Apparel for the Ethical Vegan, Andy Tabar. Today, Andy and I touch on his podcast, The Bearded Vegans, his history of touring in a band, why he started a compassionate clothing line, and much more. So stay tuned. Content warning, fat phobia. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Vegan Chub Club. Today we've got a voice that a lot of you may already be familiar with. Andy is the co-host of The Bearded Vegans, runs his own clothing company, and is generally known in the vegan community. So if you don't already know Andy, maybe this episode will help you get to know him a little better. And I'm excited to get to know you a little better and to have you on the podcast.
Right on. Thanks for having me. You know, I strive to be generally known in the vegan community, so thank
no,
you.
No, now I make it sound like, well, you're only vaguely known.
I try to maintain an air of mysteriousness, so that's perfect.
Okay, well, we'll keep you in the shadows. So I always just kind of start out by asking everyone the same question. So would you mind sharing with us what your vegan story is, when and why you became vegan?
Sure. I wish I had this amazing light bulb moment kind of story, but it really was just a thing that just kind of happened. And I don't even really remember why. I do know that at the time I was touring in a band, I had this, that's what I thought I was doing with my life. And there were six of us in the band. And one day, three of us were talking and we were like, we should go vegetarian. And I don't remember there being any specific like ethical reason. It just kind of felt like it was a good thing to do, just in that like vague sense. And so we sort of planned out, we were in the middle of this, I think like 6 month long tour going all over the US, and we were kind of planning things out and we're like, well, we love these gator tacos in Florida and we love these burgers in Texas and California's got the best burritos, but we've never toured in like north of the Bay Area. So let's just do it then. We won't know what we're missing. And then we just kind of, three of us went vegetarian shortly after that. We toured with a band. All their members were vegan. And I remember just being so kind of blown away by how chill they all were. They were just like the nicest humans. And they were very kind in answering my questions, the ones that we all get. And this was, you know, 13 years ago or so, maybe 14. Mm-hmm. So they were, you know, giving us the tofutti that tasted like paste and all that stuff. And they were just so, so kind about the whole thing. Like, I had met the militant vegans and like the hardcore scene before that, but it was really this band that just kind of inspired me. And so shortly after that, I picked up a vegan cookbook and started making things and didn't call myself vegan for a while. And then a couple weeks into it, my friend was like, seems like you're vegan now. And I was like, yeah, I guess I am. And then just never looked back. So it wasn't a struggle. It was just a thing that kind of happened.
That's awesome. Did you sing in this band or did you play an instrument? What's that about? I don't know if I knew this about you.
That's like my whole other life. Some might loosely describe it as singing, but I definitely kind of just was jumping around and screaming. I did play saxophone for a little bit. The band was what could be described as an acquired taste. So we were very heavy, but also kind of dancey and had horns and stuff like that. So, the band was full of amazing, very talented musicians who just kind of let me do my weird thing on top of all of it. So
nice. Was that ska?
You know, I would say it's certainly ska related, okay, at times. That was definitely like the roots of where we came from. But by the end of the band's very long run, I don't think anyone would describe it as ska.
I play trumpet, so I think horns are awesome.
Were you in a ska band?
I'm always nerding out. No, I was not in a ska band. No, I wasn't that outrageous on the horn. I'm more of a classical player.
Gotcha.
I have that old-timey vibrato that happens, so that's kind of where I stuck to, like jazz and more of the classical stuff.
That's awesome. I feel like in the vegan scene, because like in like hardcore and punk, there was such a big contingent of like, you know, people following Earth Crisis and going vegan, that I'm always a little bit happy when I meet someone that I'm like, oh, you were secretly a hardcore kid back in the day. But But even more rare is when you run into someone that was secretly a ska kid back in the day, and they've transposed over into like the vegan activism stuff. So it definitely makes my heart sing to hear that.
Yeah. I did go to a couple ska shows, and I did dance a little bit. Is it called skanking? Is that what it is?
Sure is.
I knew it. Okay. I'm not that far removed from it then. Where are you at right now? Are you on the East Coast? I know you were mostly on the West Coast. What's your situation?
I am currently in Marietta, Georgia, which is outside of Atlanta. Yeah, my partner lives down here. So normally I live in my van and I'm traveling all over the country. I'm originally from Connecticut, so I still have a lot of friends and my family are there. So I'm in the Northeast a lot, typically speaking. But obviously with the pandemic, Veg Fest aren't a thing. I'm traveling Veg Fest to Veg Fest with my clothing line or used to. So I've just been kind of hunkered down here for a couple of months at this point.
Yeah. Are you typically a hashtag van lifer?
I am. Yeah. I've been, I've never dedicated an Instagram to it, but I've been full-time van living since July of 2015. So
wow,
I've stuck with it for quite some time.
Good for you. And clearly now you're fluctuating between staying with either parents or a partner and indoors as opposed to just in your vehicle. How did that start? We're not anywhere near the vegan questions right now, but I follow you on your personal Instagram. So I've heard you say that you do some van life living.
Yeah. I do all the van life living. to tie it back to veganism, it really, part of it was because I've just sort of always lived this life on the road from high school and beyond. Due to touring in bands, I spent a couple of years off and on doing vegan education work, touring with FARM, the nonprofit group, Farm Animal Rights Movement. And I had this clothing line that I was doing as kind of, I would say it was a hobby, but it wasn't my 9-to-5. And then I had this 6-month stretch between tours doing the vegan education work. And I didn't want to have to go find another crappy job that I was going to have to quit in 6 months, which is sort of like the band dude cycle. So I just decided, I'd already been doing a couple of Edge Fest, like Boston, New York City, things like that. And I said, let me just look up every possible Veg Fest that I can find during this period that I am in between tours and chart it out, see if I can make sense, see if I haven't lost all of the money I have by the end of it. And it worked out pretty well.
Cool.
And so I just sort of kept doing that off and on. And then it kind of got to the point where I realized I was on the road significantly more than I was ever home at my apartment that I was in at the time. And so eventually it just sort of was like, why am I paying to host this empty space? And my roommate really appreciates it. But for me, I'm not getting anything out of it. So I had started just looking into van conversions online and got kind of obsessed with that whole thing. So I got a Transit Connect, which is pretty tiny as far as vans go. It's basically minivan sized, and then just started the transition from there. As soon as the lease ended, my roommate was moving to California. I wasn't trying to fill his shoes, and so I just jumped in the van instead, and here we are 5 years later.
Cool. Well, maybe that's another conversation for another time, but thanks for indulging me a little on that.
Yeah.
I'm trying to do better with listening to more podcasts. I think the Bearded Vegans was one of the first vegan podcasts I ever found and listened to. And I'm assuming you've also done other podcast interviews besides your own on the Bearded Vegans. Is there any that you would recommend we give a listen to?
Oh, geez, that I've been interviewed on or just in general?
Both.
Yeah, I feel like it's actually been a minute since either me or both me and Paul, my co-host on the show, have been interviewed on anything. I find that I don't gravitate towards a lot of vegan-centric podcasts, but I would say that the ones that I generally just absolutely love, Bitchy Shit Show, which was formerly Vegan Warrior Princess's Attack. They've had a big progression over their lifespan. So if you go to the Vegan Warrior Princess's Attack, that's where you're going to find the vegan content. But I like them. Recently, I've been listening to Beyond Species, which is a very interview oriented. So it's very much in the vein of exploring the intersections of various oppressions and total liberation. And those are kind of the ones that I've just been listening to lately. I'm sure, aside from Vegan Chub Club, that there's others that I'm totally blanking on at the minute. Meatbusters, I've been listening to recently. Mm-hmm. It's another interview focused show, at least from the episodes that I've listened to. And Our Hen House was like the original vegan podcast that I got into. So those are the ones that I can think of at the moment. I'm sure there must be others, but I'm totally blanking.
Yeah, I know that you guys have been kind of shouted out with a couple of those recently, Beyond Species and Meatbusters. And I just interviewed someone who was Jenny Weiner, who was just interviewed on Meatbusters. And she said that they just have started out. So I need to give these guys a listen. I'm just trying to kind of branch out myself and happy to always share whoever else has a podcast, because I think it's becoming more and more of a thing in the vegan community too.
Yeah, I feel like the vegan podcast world still has so much more to be explored and to offer. And mm-hmm. I love that, like, Vegan Chub Club is like exploring like a sort of a, obviously you have a variety of guests talking about a bunch of different stuff, but you sort of are exploring a specific aspect of veganism, and I really appreciate that. And I think that, like, the beauty of the podcast is just how ridiculously, like, niche things can get. And so I feel like we're just barely starting to see the depth of podcasting that can happen in the vegan world. And I'm sure that there's tons of, like, dozens of podcasts in this vegan world that I haven't listened to or even heard of, but I think that it's something that is really, like, we find people all the time are emailing us and saying, like, you are my only vegan friends, you're like my sense of vegan community. And the fact that we lose so many vegans because they feel isolated and alone and like the weird one, I think that, like, the more podcasts we have, and, you know, you become friends with the podcast that you listen to, even though it's a one-sided friendship. But I think that there's a lot of power in having just a, you know, a huge spectrum of vegan podcasts out there. So I'm looking forward to seeing what more and more people come up with.
Definitely. I just talked to Joelle about that on the first and second episodes of this season here, about how they actually were, Eden and Joelle, were what felt to me like vegan friends. So it was nice to hear other voices that represented the type of vegan that I am and the type of body that I have. So it's just always cool to see what people are coming out with more and more on these podcasts. Let's transition and talk more about your clothing company. Tell us about Compassion Company.
Sure. I started about 9 years ago, and I did it because I was looking for vegan clothing to wear. And at the time, I just couldn't find anything that really fit my specific vibe and my specific approach to veganism. You know, I think at the time, like, Herbivore Clothing, I love what they do. It's not my specific style, but I think, like, what they do is great. And other than them, there wasn't really anyone that was trying to do, like, a clothing line. There was people that were at, maybe I'm speaking out of turn, there could be people like that that I missed, but I feel like I know, like, most of what's going on in the vegan, like, t-shirt world. And I just couldn't find anyone that was making stuff that fits a vibe that I was looking for, which I guess you could describe as, like, band t-shirt vibe. You know, like, I, in my band, I was the guy that did all of the stuff that wasn't the music. I was booking the tours, I was putting together the merch and working with the screen printers and the artists and all that stuff. So any show I played, I was always looking at the merch table to see what designs bands had. And I would get a shirt if even if I didn't love the band, but I loved their design. Like, that was the type of person I was. And I would not buy shirts from my favorite bands if I thought their designs were horrible. So I just couldn't find stuff that wasn't more than just text or things that were either, like, too, what I would classify as, like, kind of crunchy and, like, I Heart Tofu type stuff, or things that were really militant. Like, I remember there's this one shirt that said, "You can't eat meat with a broken jaw." And I was like, for me personally, that's not the shirt I wear to start a good conversation. Maybe there are people that that works for. And some people, obviously, you're just kind of expressing your anger at the world, I guess. But I just couldn't find anything that I really wanted to wear. And I also was seeing a problem that most of the vegan shirts I was looking at were not made in the U.S. They were made with sweatshop labor. They were using sort of conventional cottons. And, you know, not that producing anything in this planet is, like, technically eco-friendly, but things that didn't even try to make an effort to pay attention to the ethics of the materials they were using or the labor that it was being produced from. And so I just thought to myself, I know how to make a shirt. I've been doing it with my band forever. I don't know how to run a business necessarily. So I had to take some courses and figure out how to like pay taxes and file a trade name and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, so that was like 9 years ago. I started with a couple of designs. I had to do a lot of research trying to find things that I would feel comfortable selling to other people. At the time, the like organic cotton shirt market was incredibly small. There's like one company, ASTs, who has since gone under, that was offering stuff, and I was working with them. I had a friend who was a screen printer. We were using, you know, I was working with him to find the best stuff. We were using water-based inks and low impact dyes. And so it all just sort of came together like that. And basically I was trying to create something that looked great, looked good before you even read what it said. You would look at it from afar and be like, that's an interesting shirt. I want to know what it says on that shirt. I want to read it. And I also want something that I felt like incorporated the vegan ethic throughout the entire chain of production. So I made everything Sweatshop Free and USA made and organic or recycled and on all of that stuff. So yeah, that was about 9 years ago, and it started as a, you know, evening time thing. My big goal was to do the Boston Veg Fest, and I did that, and it just kind of expanded outward from there, and eventually got to the point where that's all I did. That was my sole source of income. So yeah, it's been a fun ride.
That's amazing. Yeah, it takes so much to look into starting that, like you mentioned, taxes and just kind of getting the name registered and all of that. But not only that, just like really taking into account what ethics you want to make a part of it and taking into account what people want to wear. You focus on vegan merch, but also for fat people. So you've got some experiences with people giving you a little bit of a hard time, it seems like, with maybe not making certain things in smaller sizes, but also not having things in larger sizes for super fat people. Do you have some examples of that, or do you want to maybe defend that a little bit?
Sure. I mean, I'm happy to talk about it, because I think that in a general sense, I feel like a lot of people, and something we strive to do on the podcast, is like embrace the messiness of trying to be ethical in your everyday activities and consumption, and sort of embracing the fact that there are contradictions and just that messiness. And so I've experienced so much of that with the clothing line, because I have all these standards that I have laid out for the company. And if I'm being honest, most people don't care about those things. Like, I would say if I deal with 500 customers at a Veg Fest, two of them are asking me, where was this made or what is this made from? Like, most people don't really care about that. But I think it's really important, because I don't want people to have to make that choice. I don't want them to have to think about it. Like,
yeah,
if they're not going to be the scrutinizing consumer that we know vegans can be, then it's up to me. If I'm producing something they can't get from anywhere else, like my designs are all original, you can only get them from me, except when people steal them, which happens often. But like, you know, like it's really important to me to kind of set that standard and set that example, I guess. And so I come up with a lot of issues with that, because there are very few companies that make clothing to those specific standards. And in my opinion, I wish they could be even stricter of the standards. So when I started out, you know, I was making like small through extra large, like I think everybody was, or maybe I must have had 2X, because I wear a 2X, but sure. You know, and then I started realizing that I was not catering to some people, and people were coming to the table and asking if I had a 3X or a 4X, and I would say no. And I felt horrible, because I know what that is like, to try to find something to wear and not be able to wear it. You know, I'm kind of in that that middle point between sometimes I can find something at Target, but often I can't, you know, like that kind of thing. And I'm like the smallest sizes at like the plus size stores, and the biggest sizes at like the straight size stores. And so I know that. I have had times where I've just been like broken down trying to find like a specific thing to wear to a wedding, and to know that I could put that on somebody else feels absolutely horrible. So I started expanding. I got like the 3X, because that was available, but I couldn't find any place that made a 4X. Or a 5X that was doing it to the standards I'd already talked about. But I was like, okay, I think that that is like good enough for now while I continue to look for the bigger sizes, maybe from a different brand. I keep lobbying my company. I get the blanks from Royal Apparel to make larger sizes, but I am just one voice. And so all of that is to say that as like a guy that does a lot of veg fest, my body is on display a lot. And so something that like any fat vegan has experienced is what I a lot of us would call like the look, which is when you tell somebody that you're vegan and they scan your body and you can tell they're doing an assessment of your body and they're thinking, is this guy vegan? Maybe he just went vegan. I thought vegans were supposed to be skinny. I thought like the weight was just going to fall off. That's what these five old white guy doctors at the Veg Fest told me. And why is this guy here? Like he's flying in the face of everything. All these vegans that are trying to sell me on this have told me about this thing. And so because of that experience, I made a button, just a little 1 1/4 inch pinback button that said, some vegans are fat, get over it.
Nice.
And I made that design and I sat on it for so long because I was anticipating the grief that I was going to get from some people when I released that button. And so I had it for, I want to say maybe a year. It's probably a little less than that. And then finally I released it. I posted it online and I just like closed my laptop and like walked away from it for a while.
Yeah.
And thankfully, I would say the response overwhelmingly was positive. And I think that's because so many people feel like that. Even if you're not like a fat vegan, I think you feel that pressure to be the perfect vegan, the perfect representation of veganism. And so I did get some crap for it, but mostly it was a lot of people saying, I feel like that. And thank you for like representing this, you know?
Yeah.
From there, I made a shirt that said fat, happy, and vegan on it. And it featured a hippo with like sunglasses, just kind of chilling. And it was another one of those things where I was like, oh, man, I know I need to release this. I know some people are going to resonate with this. It's not going to be for everybody, but I'm going to release it. So I released it. It wasn't like the best seller of all time, but I understand that like fat is like a really tricky word for a lot of people to own.
Right.
So I totally get that. Even those of us who are like really striving to be comfortable with our bodies, it's like sometimes you don't want to have to like broadcast that. You don't want to have to deal with the comments.
Right.
Still, a lot of people were really excited that that existed and that it was there to kind of represent vegans of larger sizes.
Yeah.
I hadn't really thought about it, but I made the shirt in sizes small through 3X. And on either end of that extreme, some weird things happened. The first was which seeing people buying size small and wearing it, you know, I don't want to police who can call themselves fat.
Right.
But there are some people that I just feel like are very clearly not fat. And even if they are like maybe really short and they would wear like a medium or a large, but you'd kind of think of them as fat. It's like there's a good chance that they probably don't have a problem finding clothing in their size wherever they go.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I found out there was a lot of people who would buy it because it was like funny to them. And I don't know if I wouldn't say it was like mocking of fat people necessarily, but it was kind of that thing that's like, I ate a whole pizza, I'm so fat, you know.
And right.
And that's a behavior that's rewarded or seen as funny or quirky in straight size people, but in fat people, it's seen as you're promoting obesity and you're a bad example and you're just being, you know, it's unhealthy habits, all of that stuff. And so I started to feel so uncomfortable offering that shirt in smaller sizes because I felt like it was sort of perpetuating that. And then on the other end of the spectrum, the 3X, like I was aware that there are some people, vegans, that would wear a 4, 5, 6X and they couldn't purchase the shirt. And so for them to see people, straight size people, wearing this shirt in a small and like having a good laugh about it, I started to feel really uncomfortable. So I actually pulled all the smalls in that one and I just stopped selling them. Somewhere in some like storage bin, I have like 20 smalls sitting around somewhere. And then next, I made a new version. I like to remix my designs. I made a new version of it. And in that one, I decided straight up, I'm not making anything smaller than a large in that one. And even large is kind of that like weird middle ground. But,
right, yeah.
I was just like, this is designed to cater to specific people. Every single one of my other designs is available in like 15 different sizes. I do a unisex size. I do a fitted size, which people would, refer to as like a women's size. But I try to use gender inclusive terms. And so, like, everything else I have 15 different sizes of to cater to as many people as possible. So I'm like, I can make one that's specifically for one group of vegans that are very underrepresented, but also very prominent in this movement, or maybe not prominent, prevalent in this movement.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had to start dealing with people asking for that in a smaller medium at a veg fest and me saying, oh, no. And they're like, oh, when are you going to have more? I was like, I'm not. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, why? And it's like, well, this is designed to cater specifically to fat vegans, and sort of having those conversations. You know, I know I'm talking a lot now, but I'm a real introvert and I don't like conflict. And so dealing with that was really uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's very confrontational, and it's very like, who are you to dictate who's fat and who's not, et cetera. Yeah. But I mean,
it's
tricky. Yeah. But like you said, I think something that somewhat dictates that is, well, are you a straight size? Like, or do you have trouble finding clothing in your size that represents you? So no, I mean, personally, I do agree with that. I agree that you, you made the right choice by, sticking to that and deciding to focus on the not straight size sizes. That's difficult.
Yeah, well, it's tough. And, you know, it really resonates with some people, but you know, we're all just like with veganism, every person is at their own different level of understanding.
Yeah.
Some people call it like their personal journey type thing. And so, like this design is sitting there and it's being met by people that are on this entire spectrum of experience in terms of like most people that are like a smaller medium, they want to buy the shirt. They probably never considered the fact that they are straight sized. Mm-hmm. Like they consider themselves to be the default. They probably never heard the term straight size mm-hmm. before. And then you have people that are just so used to the terminology, and they understand it. They understand why the shirt is created, and you have everything, you know, everybody in between. So it's a hard thing to just kind of plop into the middle of like a veg fest or someone's online shopping experience.
Yeah.
And the other thing that was tricky for me with the first version of the design with the hippo was the shirt got shared by a really prominent fat activist, not a vegan. Hmm. But someone who's just like in that scene, has written a book, has a lot of followers. And initially it was shared and this person was like, oh, so great to see like representation for fat vegans. And then there was like an edit that was like, I just realized this is only available for 3X. And so that kind of brought a lot of comments and like emails my way. And this author actually emailed me and was like, hey, I'm really stoked to see that, but why are you not offering it above 3X? And I explained all the stuff I already said about all the clothing, ethical standards, all that. And I was just like, I just can't find a 4X or 5X at this point, or a 6X. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking for it, but I'm not willing to compromise and use slave labor to find it and use products, you know, conventional cottons, whatever, that are worse for the environment. And I got a lot of crap for that from this particular activist. And the, you know, this person was like, I get it, but why can't fat people like come first for once kind of thing? And it was just such a hard thing because there are so many clothing lines, vegan clothing lines and otherwise, that don't even offer a 2X when I know they easily could. I know what brands they're using and I know the 2X is there. And I don't charge a fat tax. I don't charge extra for 2-3, whatever, X, 4X. I now finally have a 4X.
Cool.
It's great. It's union made. And like I'm just feeling like, not like I'm doing so much, don't give me crap, but like, do you, like, I'm explaining to you this really intense ethical dilemma I'm in.
Yeah.
Of like representing, you know, this demographic that I am on the fringe of, but still very much a part of, and I relate to this. And also being like, I don't want to use slave labor, and it sucks that you're asking me to use slave labor. You know, like, I just was like, how do you weigh those things out? And I don't want to belittle your experience because I know it's horrible to not find clothes in your size. But it was just one of those things. I was like, where is the room for nuance and gray area and understanding of these struggles?
Yeah.
And I remember even just going to the post that this person had made and seeing people that are like, well, he can't even put those designs on like a hat or a tote bag or a button or something. And he could put those on, not worry about the sizes. And I was like, well, here's the links to where I did put all those things on buttons. So you didn't even look at the website. Mm-hmm. And the same reason I don't have hats is the same reason why I don't have 4X, because I can't find them made the way I want them to be made. You know, and it's just,
yeah.
I stepped in and I left a comment, a polite comment like that. And I felt like I had to kind of qualify myself. And I'm like, listen, I get it. I've been kicked off a roller coaster because I'm too fat to ride. I have cried because I couldn't find this wedding suit. Like, you know, like, mm-hmm. And then as soon as I said that, not a single person responded, you know? And it was just kind of like people really want something to be mad at. But once they were confronted with the fact that some of this stuff is just messy and sticky, and maybe some of the people you're trying to throw your rage at are not the ones that deserve it, and maybe there should be some kind of understanding there. And then that's like the struggle. Like, if I want to find a suit for a wedding, unless I find it at a thrift store, I'm not gonna find it at some really nice fair trade boutique. Like, I'm gonna find it at some really like low rent place that offers it in something that might not be vegan, might not be, is probably made in a sweatshop. And that's just sort of the existence of being fat and trying to put clothes on your body.
Exactly. And two things about that. I mean, number one, it's not like you are some, you know, skinnier or straight sized person who's capitalizing on fat merch. Like, you're someone who's living this life and representing this demographic, as even albeit on the fringe, as you're saying, but you know, you're still experiencing things that are within that demographic that happen to people who are fat, and you're not just exploiting fat people by selling fat merch. I'm sure, you did get a different response when you were like, listen, I experienced this stuff and I want this to be the focus. But also, your hands are a little tied with the ethics of veganism and not wanting to sacrifice that quality. And second, if you do compromise your ethics regarding all of this, and you do cave and you purchase the 5X and the 6X in sizes that are available that are not, you know, technically ethical, that are not made, you know, sweatshop free in the USA, organic material, then you're doing another disservice to fat and super fat people by excluding them in that regard. So, I mean, I get it. That's a really tough line to walk.
Yeah, it's a bummer. Now that I can offer a 4X and not in everything, like, I still, a lot of like the fitted tanks can only be in XL or 2X, and hoodies I can't get above a 3X, and it's like one of those things that I like sort of feel like I have to make some of those concessions, but it's like I always make sure no matter what there's at least one thing in a 4X that's available, and as many, basically I buy every size I possibly can in every garment, and try to make those available. And so I have a statement on my website explaining all of that stuff, even though I'm sure no one reads the FAQ, but like, you know, I just want some people to know that if they're feeling left out, that's not because I haven't thought about it, that it's something that I am actively working on. And that is a consideration a lot of clothing lines won't put out there, mm-hmm. That don't cater because it costs like a dollar more to make the shirt or something like that.
Right. No, that's amazing. And then, like, you've been mentioning sprinkles about, you know, being at these veg fests and having experience mostly catering to booths at veg fests, right? I mean, is that what your primary, like, income was pre-COVID, was going to veg fests and, like, renting out a booth? And
yeah.
Or did you have more online sales? Like, I mean, I want to talk all about it, like, elaborating on everything, but also kind of how COVID has made that what it is for you right now. And how you're doing.
Sure. Yeah. Compassion Co. was 100% of my income for several years now. And the Veg Fest played a huge role in that. So it's been tough lately. But, you know, initially I started out with the online store before I ever did the Veg Fest. And it's kind of a real shock to be like, wow, selling things online is also very hard to do. Because I had come up with these designs that I thought were amazing. And I put them online, and then I like made a few posts about it, and then I went to bed and I woke up and I had like three orders, and I was like, oh, this is not going to be easy. And, you know, I got a little better and figured out the Instagram and all that kind of stuff back when Instagram was like brand new and it was still the chronological posting order and all that. And so for a good amount of time, the online sales were, I wouldn't say the majority, it was probably like half and half kind of thing. And it was, I would say, relatively easy to get new followers and to sell things to people if you just knew when, like, the right time to post was. And then as the algorithm feed happened and things have gotten more sophisticated, and basically every social platform that most people are on has figured out how to wring as much money out of small businesses as possible. Mm-hmm. It's gotten harder and harder to sell online. The things that used to work don't anymore. And so really the Veg Fest became this primary source of income for most times of the year. You know, like holiday time, certainly you get more stuff online than like a Veg Fest. Not a lot of Veg Fest happening in the winter, but I would say kind of complacent or felt a little safe in that, because, you know, I would say I could have no online store and no new designs and just do the Veg Fest and I would be totally fine. And then all of a sudden the Veg Fest were gone. and it was like a real like kind of like slap in the face. It's like, oh, this thing you thought you had and this like great like source of sales, but also just source of like community and seeing friends and going to new places and trying restaurants and all that kind of stuff, just yanked out overnight. Like I was out in California because I was ready to do a bunch of West Coast Veg Fest. I had done a few, and all of a sudden Vegan Street Fair is canceled.
Yeah.
Like a week or two before it's supposed to happen. And that's my biggest event of the year.
I remember this. Sorry to interrupt you, but I remember okay. this. I don't know which platform I was watching your stories on, but you were in the middle of it. Everyone was about to go. Everyone was like, is it happening or is it not? And I follow Beat by Beat, and I know she was wondering what was going on with that. And like, it was this whole thing. And I just remember watching your stories and just really feeling for you and being like, oh my God. Yeah. What about people who travel for work for these fests? Like, especially with your van life situation. I'm sorry, I keep calling it van life. I mean, I could just say your van home, but I just felt like, I felt for you, man. I was like, wow, that's just yanked out from under you.
Yeah, and you know, just by virtue of everything that I've done with my life, a good portion of my friends are people involved in the music industry and like the entertainment industry. And when they're not doing that, they're like working as like a server or something. And so all of these industries rely heavily on live events and large crowds. Mm-hmm. So just kind of like overnight, I feel like 60% of my feed was people that are like, I have no work and I don't know if my industry is coming back anymore. You know, you can't transport a lot of that to like an online format. And yeah, the van life, my van, as I mentioned, it's really small.
And you carry all your merch with you too in there.
Yeah.
So
I would not recommend having a physical product based business and also living in a van at the same time. It's a very poor decision. It's my van is a very like hyper minimalist setup, which I love, but it's mostly a thing to drive and a thing to sleep in. It's not a place to hang out and cook and spend a full day or a couple of days. A lot of making that work relies on using public or private utilities, like, oh, I just go find a Whole Foods to work out of, or I use my showers from a Planet Fitness or something. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, all of those things are closed. I was working out of like the Whole Foods in, I think it was like North Hollywood. And then I find out that's like one of the biggest hot spots of COVID, you know? Mm. And so it is just like literally every little aspect of my life was just like drastically altered overnight.
Yeah, I hate to say I can't imagine, but I can't, because, again, just your story, and eventually you had to transition back to online sales. So, I mean, what was that like?
It's hard. You know, it's just like a totally different thing. Like I said, I could do every Veg Fest in the year. Like I do at most, usually it's like maybe 40 or so on the high end or maybe 30 on the low end kind of thing. And all of those is generally speaking an entirely new audience. So I could have the same, I usually have like maybe six designs at a fest, the same six designs for a full year, and it's fine. Online is like just this, you know, this as a content creator, people want more constantly. And you had an amazing hit video yesterday. Well, 2 days from now, nobody cares and you need to make the next thing.
Right.
And so all of a sudden there's been this like, oh, I need to come up with more designs and new designs and figure out ways to promote those things that's not paying for the post, although I've been experimenting with that occasionally. But you know, doing things where you're collaborating with like other vegan shirt makers and cross promoting. And I had been using the same website since I started, pretty much. And it just didn't have the tools I needed to do online sales the way that, like, you know, so you can do the creepy stuff like target people and they saw this product in your store. Now that's in their Facebook feed and all that stuff I hate. Yeah. But I had to like switch over my platform and just I'm like learning a new language in terms of just figuring out how to navigate that world that I thought I had a pretty good idea of. But it really is just so much more to keep track of. Like, I like the Veg Fest because it's like, show up and do the thing, you know, make sure you have enough shirts and a good display and do the thing and smile and chat with people.
Yeah, like, engage with people, network, etc. Make those connections.
Definitely. And at a Veg Fest, I mean, obviously where you're placed matters, but people are going to see your stuff if you're there. But online, it's like really hard to get people to see your stuff. Yep. So that's really just the name of the game. Like, I have designs, I'm like, I know a lot of people would love these, but they just never will see them because I don't know how to access them or I'm not paying to access them. And
right. You're not paying to invade their privacy.
And yeah. It's, you know, it's such a weird thing because like I love so many things about Compassion Co. I love the creative aspect. I love seeing people get really excited about a design. But I don't necessarily love, like, selling things, you know? Like, I'm not, like, interested in, like, maximizing sales and targeting the ad. Like, all that stuff is just, like, not the thing that I am passionate about. It's like, a means to an end. And I had this really nice balance of Compassion Co. worked as much as I wanted it to work. It you know, there could be long periods where I'm not really putting much work into it that's aside from maintenance. I'm sending out the orders and doing the emails and going to the Veg Fest, but otherwise I have time to work on the podcast or go hiking or do something I want to do. And now all of a sudden it's like, no, like every day you're trying to figure out how to sell a couple more shirts so you can, you know, pay your grocery bill and pay your van bill and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And it's just, it puts me into this world of business mode that I'm just so uncomfortable with. But at the moment, it's a necessity, or at least it seems like it.
Sure, of course. And you have to do whatever you can do to get through this time. I mean, small businesses for sure. And they're offering things, you know, state to state, sometimes nationwide for assistance. But, you know, you're not guaranteed that. And yeah, well, we don't need to go into politics, but but as far as all that goes, I mean, good for you to keep plugging away at it. And you seem to have some good reactions right now to your Halloween merch. We're recording this at the very tail end of September, but this will be the Halloween week special. So I was curious if you want to talk about that collection.
I love Halloween very, very much. I've done a number of kind of limited edition things. I usually do like a turkey shirt for Thanksgiving every year. I've never done a proper Halloween collection release or even like one design. Mm-hmm. And this year I was like, well, because I need to put out lots of new stuff and because I love Halloween, I'm finally going to do like a true Halloween collection drop. And so I'd actually been preparing for this even before the pandemic hit. I had started collecting designs. I work with a lot of artists. I can only draw stick figures, but I had like started preparing everything and collecting everything. Some of them are ideas I've had in my head for years. One of them that says only zombies eat their friends was like the first idea I had for Compassion Co. like years ago. But I had kind of convinced myself that it wasn't. I was like, ah, there's so many designs that are like vegan zombie grains, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And I was like, no one needs another one of those. So that one I just made as a sticker, and eventually everyone was like, please put that on a shirt. So I put that on a shirt, turned out to be the best seller. But it's been a lot of fun to work on that. It made doing the business fun because I got to transpose the veganism and the clothing over into the world of horror and mysterious stuff. And you know, I was going to graveyards to do photo shoots and just like really kind of playing that up.
Yeah.
So it's been a lot of fun to do that.
I love that. And that was the shirt. Obviously, it was the bestseller, and that's the one I was going to point out. And you mentioned on that post for it that you're like, I wish someone could just see me right now crawling around a graveyard with a zombie hand trying to capture this promo photo. Like, and that's honestly what, as a content creator, I was thinking about when I saw that post. I was like, wow, I wonder how he had to do that. And then, yeah, it's just so funny the things you have to do, I bet.
Like I said, I'm an introvert. I'm pretty shy. I don't like doing things in front of people. So I went to the cemetery. Thankfully, it was a cloudy day on like a Monday. And I just would like wait until no one was around, and I'd like drop down and like try to take the picture. And I'm trying to, it was this like whole process. I just had to do this
covert operation.
I chose to do this video for this Halloween thing that'll have been long out by the time this episode airs. But I had to be, essentially, I'm being Chris Farley from the guy living in a van down by the river skit.
Oh, wow.
And so I have I currently have a shaved face, but I wanted to find a spot near a river to park my van to have in the background of this video that I was doing. And I was driving all over, just like looking at the Google Maps, being like, where's there a body of water? And I would go to a spot and be like, this is pretty good, but there's people around and I can't do this in front of people. And I finally found this like quiet corner of a neighborhood that was far enough from a few houses to do it. So yeah, trying to capture those pictures was a real experience.
That's amazing. I can't wait to see the Chris Farley parody. Talk about a legend, seriously.
Yeah.
So this, you said this was the first Halloween collection you really came up with that you committed to.
Yeah.
You'd come up with some things, but do you have any other holiday merch up your sleeve? You said you do a turkey shirt usually.
Yeah, so the turkey shirt is something that I've been doing for a long time now, and it was the first time I ever did like a limited edition pre-order, which is what so many of my designs are right now, which is where, you know, people order the shirt and then I place the order with my printer. That way I'm, you know, when I have the money up front, and I know exactly what people want. I don't have to make a ton of extra stuff, which right now, given that there's no Veg Fest, it's really kind of the only way for me to go. I've noticed a lot of other clothing creators doing that as well. But I did that years ago, and I did it as a benefit for Woodstock Farm Animal Sanctuary, where they were getting 15% of the sales. It just worked out really well. I teamed up with Tofurky. They provided coupon booklets for every single order. They provided like free Tofurky product coupons for the first 50 orders, and it just sort of became this really big thing.
Amazing.
So I made it an annual thing for a while. I would do a new design every 2 years. And I just sort of didn't have my stuff together the last couple of years. And it just kind of, I was like, do people really want another turkey shirt? But this year I'm bringing it back because why not? We'll see how that goes. I'm actually going to launch it on Friday. So the pre-order will have come and gone by the time people hear this, but there's always going to be a couple extras up online. And so this year I usually rotate who it's going towards the benefit. But this year it's back to Woodstock, teamed up with Tofurky again. Going to offer one brand new design, one old design. People can get one or they can get both. And there's going to be all sorts of goodies and freebies and sticker sets and all that good stuff to go along with them as well. So that's definitely happening. I have some ideas for Christmassy stuff. I've done a limited edition Christmas shirt in the past. So it might just be a couple new designs that aren't specific for Christmas, but just new for the month. So there's definitely a lot coming out.
Yeah, we've got you between a rock and a hard place here, because I was originally going to have Andy be the season closer, which is like early December, but then I realized, oh no, like, let's just talk about the Halloween merch, because I don't really have anything for Halloween, but Halloween and Thanksgiving merch will come and go, and you're still in the idea phase for the Christmas merch, so do you want to tell people where they can find your merch as soon as it's available and where they can give you a follow?
The best place to find stuff to make that purchase, you can check out my sweet new website at compassionco.com, and then it's just Compassion Co on Facebook and Instagram. Those are the two I use the most. Really, it's all Instagram for me. And the podcast, The Bearded Vegans, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook, or thebeardedvegans.com. For people that are like, oh, you have 250 episodes, I have no idea where to start, you can go to thebeardedvegans.com/start here. It'll bring you to a Spotify playlist of what we think are some of our best episodes and the ones that are the most indicative of what we do.
Cool. I know that the Chubb Club is very excited to have this collab with you and with you as half of the Bearded Vegans, and learn a lot more about Compassion Company, because we got to support these small businesses. You have some cool stuff coming out for all the holidays, so I'm very excited to see it. Yeah, it was really fun to chat with you.
Yeah, definitely. No, thank you for having me.
All right, everyone. Well, we'll catch you in the Chubb Club soon. Bye.
Goodbye.
The conversation doesn't have to end here, my chubby vegan friends. Again, you can follow Andy's vegan merch line at compassionco.com and at compassionco on Instagram and Facebook. If you don't already follow his podcast, you can head to thebeardedvegans.com or thebeardedvegans on Instagram and Facebook. You can also search for them on whatever app it is that you're using to listen to this podcast. As usual, follow us here in the club at Vegan Chub Club on Twitter, at The Vegan Chub Club on Instagram and Facebook, and even join the Facebook group. Stay tuned for the next Chubby Coffee Break this Friday, and we'll talk to you next week with another guest interview. Thanks for listening.